mornings. I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, opponents of the Shady Grove redevelopment plan that was recently approved by city leadership are getting serious and getting organized, circulating petitions to force a referendum vote on the issue. Also this morning, adulting is hard, and one of the hardest parts may also be one of the most unexpected. Young adults trying to figure out how to navigate the healthcare system for the first time. And happening around town, live music, great food, and more, the second annual Vet Fest is a day-long community celebration of and for all those who have served. We'll get a preview. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Wednesday, June 10th, 2026. Not to toot our own horn here, but today we begin the 25th season of Good Mornings. The 25th, our very first Good Mornings program, June 10th, 2002. So we have completed 24 years. This program entering, as of today, the 25th season of the program. So, pretty doggone cool. Yeah, it was really sad news yesterday when we heard of the passing of Coach Dick Strom, University of Findlay legend, college football Hall of Fame coach, five-time national champion of the University of Findlay Oilers. And I only met Coach Strom a handful of times, but I will never forget the very first time that I met the coach. He knew my name before I even could introduce myself and made me feel like we had been friends for life. You know, he just had that ability to drop it. And I have had the good fortune in, you know, now for almost 25 years of speaking with a lot of well-known individuals, meeting a lot of, well-known individuals, interviewing a lot of celebrities, that kind of thing, on this program, interacting with these individuals. And very few have the ability. Most are incredibly nice, incredibly gracious, but very few actually have the ability to kind of draw you in to their circle, if you will, and make you feel like you are truly a friend. And Coach Strom had that ability to do that. The last time I saw Coach Strom, he didn't seem to be doing very well. You kind of knew that it was, what, 94. So you knew that the time was coming, and but still, it was certainly very sad to hear of his passing, and there will never be another. He was one of one, and certainly thoughts and prayers with his family and his extended family, his football family, and all of the lives that he touched throughout the years. Our condolences all around. Speaking of sports, on kind of a lighter side, this was fascinating to me. The NHL playoffs are, what, they're all tied up now, two games apiece, right? That's where we stand after four games of the NHL Stanley Cup playoffs. The Las Vegas Golden Knights and the Carolina Hurricanes are not only locked in a battle for Lord Stanley's Cup, they are also in the midst of a baby boom. And this appears to be a baby boom competition as well. According to the NHL, several of the Golden Knights and Canes players are either expecting or have recently welcomed newborns. New dads on the Golden Knights squad include Noah Hanifin, Mark Stone, Nick Dowd, Jack Eichel, and Shea Theodore. So five... either five players that have either welcomed new babies or are expectant fathers. On the Hurricanes front, Keandre Miller, Sean Walker, and Jalen Chatfield are all new dads to babies that were born during the postseason. So brand new dads. That is pretty impressive there. That is that's a lot of new dads out there on the ice. I just thought that was kind of cool. So going to be a very warm day today. We're going to be in the 90s, lots of sunshine. If you're going to be outside, do take the appropriate precautions and make sure that you wear sunscreen. This is big news on that front. For the first time in more than 20 years, the Food and Drug Administration has signed off on a new sunscreen ingredient, giving the green light to bimotrizinol. Do I have that right? Bimotrizinol? I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right, but this is an ingredient that has been approved in other countries to provide sun protection. It is a non-mineral chemical ingredient. It is an ultraviolet filter that is more stable, meaning it breaks down less easily in the sun than other UVA and UVB filters that are currently on the market. And unlike other UVA filters, dermatologists say bimotrizinol is not as easily absorbed into the bloodstream after application. So that is a benefit. In the statement, the FDA says it considers the ingredient to be generally recognized as safe and effective for use in sunscreens by adults and children 6 months of age and older. Advocacy groups like the Environmental Working Group have petitioned for its approval for many years, saying this is a great day for American consumers and everyone who has fought to improve sunscreen options and close the UVA protection gap in U.S. sunscreen. So I don't know when they'll be on the market. This was just approved, what, within the past few days. So I'm sure that they're not available on store shelves yet, but they soon will be. So you want to watch for that. Bimotrizinol is the ingredient. All right, there you go. Good news. Good news. A couple of other items here. Among the first things you need to know this morning, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day, a new study, more than half a million Americans involved in this study finds that remote work significantly increased isolation and mental distress following the pandemic shift to home offices. Researchers found that remote eligible workers spent one additional hour alone daily and were more likely to have zero social contact for an entire day. Which makes sense. I mean, if you're not in an office, you're not getting that contact. And those who work remotely, much more likely to have zero personal social contact with other human beings for an entire day or days at a time. The study attributes roughly one-third of America's post-pandemic mental health decline to the effects of remote work. One-third can be traced. Wow. In other words, if everybody went back to the office, we eliminated remote work entirely, we could immediately see a decrease in the number of mental health issues by one-third. Workers living alone faced the steepest toll, showing much higher rates of isolation and distress compared to those with a spouse or a family. Mental health impacts appeared in prescription data, with remote workers seeking more medication for depression and anxiety. So, I know a lot of workers, myself included, have taken to working remotely much more often than we ever did before the pandemic. And there are a lot of benefits. We, you know, many of us like that, but these are real impacts of that that you want to take into account. And I will say that the more I work at home from the home studio where we are this morning, incidentally, the more I notice that I have to get out more. You know, I don't care if I'm just running to Walmart to pick up something that I may not even need. Sometimes I just need to get out. And, you know, so just something to keep in mind if you are a remote worker or you know a remote worker. Might want to reach out and just say, hey, how you doing? Mind if I drop by for a little bit? They might enjoy the company. Speaking of work, this is It's kind of interesting. Meta, the company behind Facebook and Instagram, Meta is selecting Columbus as one of four U.S. cities to host a new AI career training program. The company says America's Workforce Academy will launch in Ohio, in the capital city. The other cities are Indianapolis, Houston, and Baton Rouge. Those accepted into the program will be in training for roughly 4 to 5 weeks to prepare for work at AI data center sites. And those who are interested in learning more or perhaps applying, you can find more information at meta.com. So I know there's a lot of pushback against AI, but hey, if you can't beat it, join it, right? So there are career opportunities if you are interested. And lastly here, among the first things that you need to know this morning, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. The Federal Trade Commission is warning consumers about fake CAPTCHA screens popping up while people browse the World Wide Web. You know what we're talking about here, CAPTCHA screens? That's one of those screens that pops up. You have to click on a button or click on, you know, some photos with fire hydrants or whatever just to prove that you are human and not a bot. The agency says the scam looks like those normal prove you're human check screens, but it tells users to open a Windows command box and paste in a line of code. And that can make the person install hidden malware on your computer. So if you are confronted with one of those types of screens, the FTC says scammers can steal your banking, your email, your other login information for all your accounts. Real CAPTCHA checks do not ask people to run commands on a device. So if it's asking you to do that, it is not legitimate. Good information for consumers to know. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Wednesday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. Chance of showers and storms today with a high in the 90s. Chance of showers tonight, low around 70. It's going to be dangerously hot today with heat index values of around 100 degrees expected. Forecasters say temperatures that hot along with high humidity can cause heat illnesses like heat exhaustion and heat stroke. People are advised to wear lightweight and loose-fitting clothing, drink plenty of fluid, stay in the AC if you can, and check up on relatives and neighbors. Get more hot weather safety tips along with the latest forecast and weather alerts on our website. Following the mass shooting at the Old West End Festival last weekend, upcoming festivals in Toledo are promising enhanced safety and security measures.
Metro Parks Toledo leaders are promising their most extensive security plan for this week's Watershed Weekend. The four-day festival at Glass City Metro Park kicks off Thursday, with activities still planned for both sides of the Maumee River despite last weekend's shooting. Organizers tell us they had already planned to amp up security, including bag checks, metal detector wands, and a single secure entrance point.
WTOL 11 Sophia Periconi reporting. The 36th annual Farmer Share Breakfast will be held Thursday morning at the Old Millstream Center on the Hancock County Fairgrounds. During the special breakfast to celebrate the rich agricultural heritage of Hancock County, the 2026 Hancock County Agriculture Hall of Fame inductees and their families will be honored. There will be a presentation from the local FFA public speaking contest winner, and the agribusiness scholarship recipients will be recognized. Get more details on the Farmer Share Breakfast in this story on our website. The Village of Ada is continuing its community-wide strategic planning process and encouraging residents, businesses, students, and families to help shape the future of the village by participating in upcoming engagement opportunities. There's also a brief online survey, which we have a link to in this story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news at WFIN.com.
So our cover story this morning, opponents of the Shady Grove redevelopment plan that was recently approved by city leaders, the opponents are getting serious and getting organized, circulating petitions now to force a referendum vote on the issue. One of those individuals, former Councilwoman Holly Frischi, is with us on the line this morning. And I have to clarify because, first of all, my understanding was that the opposition to this was more on the rezoning part rather than the annexation part. But you are actually circulating two petitions to oppose both.
We're not opposing. We're trying to make sure that the people have a say. And in this issue, so there are two issues. Number 59 is the annexation for Shady Grove, and 60 is the M2 multifamily high density apartment proposal, all in that area. So for some, it's focused out on 237, and for others, it really impacts the entire city of Findlay.
So explain the opposition, because from what I have been able to read, and I've been following, as many people have been following, the back and forth online on this, and obviously that is may or may not be representative of the sentiment as a whole, because we all know how that works with online participation and social media and such. But I've read a lot of folks who are saying we need to save Shady Grove, and it seems as though that ship has sailed, that it is unlikely that anyone would be stepping up to operate a golf course on that property. It seems like there is, if anything is going to be done, it's going to be redeveloped into something else. So what exactly is the opposition? What is the hope here?
So, Chris, let me try to give a better picture for you. So yes, there are folks that have that sentimental feeling. And the reason I think it's emotional for some is that this is the first time we've ever seen an expedited annexation. And what that did is it kind of tied the hands of the commissioners that the people in Marion Township didn't have a say. But I've been attending the council meetings, even though I'm not on council. And there has been not one person speaking in favor of it. So there's really three issues. The main issue out there on 237 is the concerns that were raised were traffic, public safety, and then the water runoff. So all of those concerns were acknowledged and agreed upon. So City Council acknowledged those concerns and said, we understand your concerns with public safety when it comes to traffic. There's a lot of car accidents out there on 224, 237. It's a cut through. They also acknowledge the water runoff closer to Lakeview Forest Lake coming up to 568, that has not been addressed. There was talk about the developer shared their opinion on the traffic flow with the impact. There's a lot of talk about possibly widening the road, adding a turn lane, all these different things. Mm-hmm. Nobody's saying who's paying for it. The third thing that has been an issue is pedestrian traffic, not just car traffic. So those are all validated concerns by City Council that they acknowledged that the people that have been coming last Tuesday, there was nearly 40 citizens who spoke between the city and the county voicing concerns. And the part that was troubling is that although council acknowledged it, their answer is, let's just move forward and figure it out as we go.
Well, so you
that's out there. Yeah, you have a couple people talking about. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, so you don't have confidence in either the developer or the city officials to address those issues moving forward?
So, Chris, that's not what it is. So we have the cart before the horse. And the reason that the citizens inside the city are concerned, besides what we just talked about, because Primrose has a lot of EMS traveling for Taven of EMS traveling, and with this increased traffic, of, you know, approximately 500 apartments, you're looking at a possible 1,000 folks coming in that area. That's going to increase the traffic flow quite a bit. But inside the city, we're not just talking about Shady Grove having their annexation in housing. You're looking at a total of nearly 1,000 apartments looking to be approved in the city of Findlay this year. And we have city council and the administration acknowledging that our public safety is not prepared to handle it. And when I say that, we don't have enough police officers or firemen. We don't know if and where we need to add another fire station. If we're going to keep increasing our population and not addressing the services that our citizens are entitled to living in this community that has been great, we have a problem. So you can't just say, we'll do it and figure it out as we go. We already know we have a shortage on police. How is that acceptable? Because we don't have the money to be able to hire these police officers unless you and me and every citizen in the city of Findlay is prepared to increase their income tax.
Well, couldn't it be argued that the additional income tax from these generated by the residents or the people who will be occupying these housing units would provide the income necessary to increase those infrastructure, police officer, fire, and that kind of thing?
Do we have the jobs, Chris? Do we have the high-paying jobs that the citizens in Findlay have been crying out for 10 years? No, we don't. Our medium household income is less than $50,000, right? We're not addressing it. These apartments, specifically in Shady Grove, we're talking about them being bougie high-end apartments, right? $1,400, $2,000 a month. And tomorrow at City Planning Board of Zoning Appeals, they're already asking to make these apartments, instead of 500 square feet, 350. They're already asking to put less than two parking spaces. So they're wanting to squeeze folks in there.
Well,
and where are these folks coming from?
To be fair, I don't know that they are asking to downsize all of the apartments, just certain number
Correct.
Of them. And it would certainly not be out of the realm of possibility. It's not a stretch to figure that individuals who would be occupying some of these apartments would have, if it's only one individual, would probably have one vehicle. So to require two spaces for every apartment might be overkill. So some of that makes sense.
I wouldn't use the word make sense. It's an option. It's a consideration. Well, but we as the city of Findlay pass zoning to set a standard. And we as a community have not been a transient community. We want to have jobs in Findlay that are good paying jobs that we can raise a family and continue to make Findlay our home for our neighbors and their kids and the next generations. Now, we don't even know where these jobs are coming from. And you brought up the income tax. If people are going to be working in the city of Findlay, we're going to be collecting that income tax, whether they live here or not. So is it fair to say that this same development could take place through Marion Township and not being annexed in, if we're going to be creating jobs, that we're going to need 1,000 apartments approved this year? 1,000, Chris. Where's our single family? Where's our condos? Where's our duplexes? We had a housing study in 2020 that said what we needed, and we more than accomplished that. And now we're going gangbusters past that.
Well, I think
I don't know.
In our conversation with the mayor earlier this week, she acknowledged that this probably puts us where we need to be in her mind in terms of the number of apartments and future development would be single family homes and so on and so forth. So that's certainly a valid part of the discussion as to how many do we need to meet the needs of the community. as we mentioned, and I want to give you the opportunity to let folks know about this, you are circulating petitions that would force a referendum vote on these issues. Talk a little bit about what you hope to put on the ballot and how, if someone is so inclined to participate in this effort.
Sure. So a referendum petitions are the exact ordinances 59 and 60 that were passed on June 2nd. They will be those ordinances on the ballot. So the way I describe it to folks is you get to act like a city council person. You will get to have the exact same vote, yes or no, on both of those ordinances if you live in the city of Findlay and it makes it on the ballot. You could agree that you wanted to annex, and then you can say you disagree that you don't want M2 zoning. You can disagree on both. You can agree on both.
Right.
That's the beauty of this referendum.
In order to get that on the ballot, you have a pretty compressed time frame to collect signatures.
Sure. So just to give you a little politics story behind this. So typically in the past, a referendum requires 10% of the gubernatorial previous election vote for voter turnout. So that's what we were planning on originally, which would have been around 1,300 signatures. And then surprise, in September last year, our legislative authority down there in Columbus made the decision to slide into their legislation. No, we don't think 10%. We think 35%. So 35% from the last gubernatorial is taking us to approximately 4,712 good signatures inside the city of Findlay.
And again, you make a good point. Just to reiterate this, this is not something that city leadership decided to change. This was changed at the state level. So let's place blame it lies in terms of that. How would folks sign? I mean, if somebody again wants to be a part of that, I know that you've got plans to be out and about circulating those petitions.
Sure. We have a mini army that people have been coming forward. So we have people throughout the city that have petitions to circulate. We have pop-up locations, Cakes for Heaven's Sakes, the library, Gabe's out in front of Gabe's. We have people that are at Main Street Deli, or they are at, I was at Panera yesterday. Mm-hmm. So there's plenty of locations. You know, today is ice cream day at 50 North. There are a lot of folks that have petitions. So, you know, if you're out for ice cream for 50 North Day, find a friend who may have a petition. Get your John Hancock signed on there twice. We need two signatures, one for each. So there's a lot. We have a lot of people going door to door. If somebody comes to your door, please answer it. We have people calling and organizing signatures in advance. So there's a lot going on.
We will leave it there because we are out of time, but we do have a link on our webpage for more information about this issue and the organized opposition against the Shady Grove annexation and redevelopment plan as it sits right now. Again, former Councilwoman Holly Frischi with us this morning. Holly, thanks very much for coming on and sharing your views. We appreciate it.
Awesome, Chris. Have a good one.
So we are just past the graduation season now, and all kinds of new experiences for these young adults who are going out to conquer the world, and yet they face a number of challenges. And this is nothing new. I mean, generations of young adults going out to make their mark in the world always face challenges, some expected, some unexpected. Yesterday, we were talking about how to get a car loan or get a mortgage or even get an apartment in many cases when you don't have much of a credit history to back that up. That is a familiar challenge. Today, we are talking about one of those new responsibilities that young adults have that they may not feel ready for: managing your own health care, scheduling appointments, understanding insurance, making medical decisions on your own for the first time. This is something that young people, you know, really haven't maybe had to do before. And even more so now when young people can remain on their parents' health plans for longer, this becomes an even bigger issue when they transition to managing their own care for the first time. Susan Shanksky is director of transitional care support with the Bridges program, where her job is to improve that transition from pediatric to adult health care. And Susan, we often talk about the fact the kids don't learn anything in school about how to balance a checkbook or file their taxes. Well, they also don't learn about managing their own health care. So it's no wonder, especially with our system, that this can be very confusing.
Absolutely. I think it's a great point. And most of us are confused by navigating healthcare. It's an interesting point that we absolutely could be teaching more of this in schools. And I think kids who maybe access the school nurse possibly do have that more, right? So if they go to the nurse every day to get their insulin shot for their diabetes, they potentially have some of that written into their accommodation plan. But the kids who don't have issues might actually be at a disadvantage here because they're not interfacing with those systems as much and they might know less about it.
Well, and like you said, it's can actually be beyond confusing. It's confusing for me, and I've been doing it for 40 years, so overwhelming may actually be a better word. What are the most common things that older teens and young adults struggle with when they begin handling their own care?
I think some of the very practical steps of finding a provider and, you know, getting connected and navigating their new insurance piece is definitely a problem for adolescents and young adults, especially if they haven't practiced any of it before. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just getting established with care and making sure that there aren't any gaps, you know, all people are going to need a healthcare provider at some point, hopefully just for your well visits, right? But you don't anticipate what's going to be. And kids with chronic conditions, of which, you know, there are lots of kids, about a third of kids have special healthcare needs, right? So those might be anything from mild asthma to autism to really complex, rare metabolic disorders. And all of those folks need to get established in medical care. It's easier from some than others. We want to try to avoid gaps. So for those with who are especially vulnerable, I guess I would say, you know, we really want to make sure that we can identify providers and set them up well in the system and with the resources that they need.
So how can families, parents, caregivers, how can families help young people build the kind of life skills that they need when it comes to navigating adult healthcare?
I mean, I think similar to the examples you gave, you have to teach them how to go to the bank and figure out their checking account. I mean, some of these things are, they're skills you got to practice. You have to do them. So, you know, families can absolutely, during a visit, encourage the young person to speak up. And they could do that from really young ages, right? A child at a pediatrician appointment when they're just very, very young can speak up about which part of their body hurts. You know, my ear hurts. They can speak up for themselves quite a bit. And the more parents let them do that, the better they are at doing it later in life.
Can healthcare providers also help make that a little bit easier through, you know, the time when they're youths up to the time when they're young adults?
Absolutely. I think if, you know, you're a pediatrician and the 15-year-old comes into the visit with his mom and he's on the phone in the corner and you only talk to mom, it's a real disservice to everybody, right? This young person has to be engaged in this conversation and has to be part of it. So absolutely bringing them in. It's best practice in transition work to allow time alone with the patient. So if you're a pediatrician, primary care or specialty, you know, allow some time with the adolescent and young adult, alone time, so they can bring up questions that they might have that they might not otherwise bring up in front of family. So there are many providers who do a great job of this, but sometimes it's just easiest. If your mother will speak for you, you don't need to bring it up at all. Providers can sort of stop that structure.
The moral of the story being that adulting is hard, but it is not impossible. Yeah. What advice would you have for teens, for young adults who are just starting to take ownership of their health?
You know yourself well, right? And that's what I would say to teens and young adults. Think about your goals and use the people that you know, your team to figure that out, whether it's your providers, your family, whoever's important to you. Figure out what your goals are and then find some area where you think you can take a next step and take that next step, right? Whatever it is. If it's your goal is around, you know, making sure you're constantly taking your medication, break that down into smaller pieces. First, recognize that you're out of it. You might deal with the pill box. You might actually call in the script. You might, you know, use the app to fill your script, go pick it up. Perhaps you've been proficiently doing that all along, but taking goals that you have, breaking them into parts, and really just walking them through. Jump in, that's what I would say.
Again, Susan Shansky is Director of Transitional Care Support with the Bridges Program, helping to transition young older teens and young adults from that pediatric into the adult healthcare environment. And where can folks go to get more information?
They should definitely start with their own pediatrician or healthcare team. They should speak with the doctors and nurses and social workers that they work with all the time to learn more. For many conditions, there are some condition-specific resources that are tremendous, you know, whether you have Crohn's disease or arthritis. So there are some very specific resources in those regards. Nationally, sort of the clearinghouse around provider guidance and information for families. It's got transition.org is a really useful website with lots of information. Another new website that that we know about is healthcareshift.com that really gives some practical tips for teens, you know, working to take that ownership.
Susan, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
We've had some pretty brazen thefts, some pretty unusual thefts in the broken news in the past, but this really stands out. Happened in Philadelphia at a warehouse on Friday where a truck driver stole 18 pallets of Noble Oak bourbon. 10,800 bottles in all, worth $500,000. 10,000 bottles of bourbon, 18 pallets. The driver flashed an ID, and warehouse staff confirmed that a truck was expected with a shipping broker, but the thief lacked a crucial purchase order. But he flashed the ID, and the truck driver somehow made off with the shipment without having the actual purchase order. The bourbon's parent company calls it a coordinated cargo theft operation carried out in broad daylight. The chief operating officer of the company suspects cyber criminals posed as legitimate carriers to hijack the shipment digitally before the physical theft. The massive volume suggests sophisticated planning, they said, predicting that the bourbon will move through unauthorized wholesalers and online sellers in the mid-Atlantic region. So the company urges retail customers and wholesale businesses to report any suspicious bulk offers of Noble Oak bourbon because it is it's probably the stolen. That's so somebody comes up to you on the street, hey, want to buy a bottle of bourbon? Then it may very well be hot. That's crazy. 10,000 bottles of bourbon stolen in broad daylight. That's bold. That is bold. Elsewhere in the broken news, this is from the dumb criminal category. A police chase outside of New Orleans, Louisiana, resulted in a man getting attacked by an alligator. Well, you can chalk this up to one more reason why it's not a good idea to run from police. The State Patrol says that they were able to track a reckless driving suspect to an elevated stretch of highway. Victor Rivas tried to escape by jumping into a swamp. And that's, it's a swamp in Louisiana. There might be gators. And sure enough, he was attacked by a gator that bit both of his arms. The police report shows that Mr. Rivas was eventually caught with the help of drone technology. I would have thought that you probably could have located him by just following the sounds of the person yelling, ah! You know? Should be pretty easy to track him down. State police say the lesson is that impaired driving can lead to serious and unpredictable consequences. Although, again, I'm thinking this is not an unpredictable consequence. If you jump into a swamp in Louisiana, pretty good chance there might be a gator lurking around someplace. But anyway. From the International File, a man is facing legal trouble in Ontario, Canada, after an investigation by authorities found that he allegedly flew commercial airliners for nearly 17 years without the required license. Now, this is not going to make people who are already nervous about flying feel any better, I'm sure, but the pilot was arrested on June 1st and is charged with 7 counts, including fraud, using forged documents, and public mischief. Although I'd call this more than just mischief. The investigation, according to authorities, suggests a deliberate effort to circumvent systems designed to safeguard the public. The employer of the pilot, Air Canada, so not a small regional carrier or anything, this is Air Canada, employed the pilot. They issued a statement noting that safety was not compromised by this incident. How do you figure that? He was an unlicensed pilot for 17 years. Not sure how you can say that safety was not compromised. They do note that the pilot in question was removed from active duty. That's good. That's the least you can do. First court appearance will be June 29th. So, and I'm guessing he won't fly in for that appearance. Keeping him close to home. Let's see. Now, this is rather unusual. Bridgeton, Missouri is the dateline on this. Bridgeton, Missouri. Police are investigating after a man tried to strangle his coworker. Happened at McAllister's Deli on Monday when Javon Malloy followed a woman into the back office, locked the door, and said he was going to kill her. The manager of the store heard the scuffle, unlocked the door. Talk about quick thinking. He unlocked the door, got the woman out, and then shut the door again and locked Mr. Mallory inside. Then called 911 and said, hey, he's locked in the back room. Now, in case you're wondering what prompted Mr. Malloy to commit such a heinous act, and he'll be certainly facing consequences. Apparently, the whole thing started after someone else got a promotion that Mr. Malloy felt he deserved. I can't imagine why in the world he didn't get that promotion. Seems like such a good, stable employee. Can't imagine why he wouldn't have gotten a job promotion. Well, finally here in the broken news from Hackensack, New Jersey, emergency responders successfully extricated a woman from a garbage chute after she had fallen 10 floors in her apartment complex. They had one of those garbage chutes down to the basement, and somehow this woman fell 10 floors in the garbage chute and had to be rescued. A caller to 911 on Sunday reported that a woman had entered the building's trash chute from the 14th floor. Upon arrival, crews located the victim trapped between the 3rd and 4th floors, surrounded by accumulated debris. Fire personnel, police officers, and EMS teams all collaborated on the rescue operations, sawing away chute panels while preparing a rope rescue and a wall breach as an alternative. Firefighters cleared sufficient refuse to extract the woman feet first after about a half hour. She had been stuck for about a half hour. EMS personnel provided immediate medical attention to the victim. The cause of the incident remains undetermined. But how does someone fall into the trash chute and 10 floors down? Probably lucky that she survived that. Man, there you go. That is today's broken. It's probably one of the most unusual calls that they have gotten, I would think, in recent memory. There you go. That is today's broken news report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Most of us like to be out in the sun. That's why sunscreen and other safety measures are key to protecting your skin from aging and cancer. The FDA recommends using a sunscreen with an SPF of 15 or higher. Also, look for broad spectrum on the label. That means both harmful ultraviolet A and B rays are blocked. Remember, SPF plus broad spectrum equal healthy fun in the sun. Visit www.fda.gov/sunscreen for more information.
This message provided by WFIN.
I want to get to our daily download now, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. This is interesting data from the Pew Research Center. They find that cryptocurrency adoption remains steady among Americans overall. Roughly one in five adults use or hold or invest in digital currency. Have any cryptocurrency in your portfolio? I have a little bit of cryptocurrency. I just kind of bought on a whim, actually, just to see, kind of dip my toe in the water. It's not anything I'm going to make any money on, but just kind of, to have, because it seems to be the trendy thing to do. About one in five adults have or use or hold or invest in digital currency. But what is interesting about this new data is, for the first time, a notable partisan divide has emerged. Usage of cryptocurrency among Republicans jumped from 16% in 2021 to 22% currently, while participation among Democrats held at 17%. Young men lead the adoption rates. 38% of males between the ages of 18 to 29 use crypto, compared to 15% of women in that age group. Upper income households show the highest participation at 27%, up from 17% in 2021. The Trump administration's push to make America the crypto capital of the world coincides with this increase in Republican adoption, of this surge in Republicans investigating or exploring cryptocurrency options. Asian adults, in terms of ethnicity, Asian adults maintain the highest usage rate overall at 25%, while Caucasian American participation rose from 13 to 18%. Since 2021, so in the last 5 years or so. It's kind of interesting about who is buying and holding and using cryptocurrency these days. So, happening around town this weekend, live music, great food, and more. It is the second annual Vet Fest, a day-long community celebration of and for those who have served. Toby Brown is with us on the line this morning to give us more details. This event organized through the Hancock County Veterans Service Office, and it is just a terrific event that I know last year, the first one, kind of tied in with the 250th anniversary of the Army. This year, the 250th anniversary of our nation. So you're all decked out in your 250th gear, I notice.
I am. Last year, I had my American flag suit. This year, I've got my 250th year suit, and I will have this on Saturday when I'm up on stage.
There you go. Tell us what's happening here. Well, before we get to that, talk a little bit about the idea behind VetFest. Again, this is still relatively new. Talk about what kind of precipitated, putting this together and creating this event.
Yeah, so Ed Newton, the Resiliency Operations Manager at our office, had an idea that, like, what do we do to get younger veterans together and everything, and really veterans in general. Mm-hmm. And he came up with this idea a few years ago. And in our office, if you have an idea and you take it and you run with it, and he really did. He put a committee together and of community members that wanted to help support, and it grew into what we couldn't believe happened last year, and now it's happening again this year, and planning on it for years to come.
It is a huge event, as we mentioned. It's pretty much all day long. So give us the details on this.
Yeah, so we will be out there bright and early getting everything set up, but we actually have a ride, a motorcycle ride that's starting this year. You can start registering around 10 o'clock at the AmVets here in Findlay. That ride, they actually kickstands up at noon, but then the gates open at 3 down on Broadway. The first band comes on at 4, and then we've got 4 different bands from then on. We've got Shifferly Road, Graveyard Daisies, Reverb, and Voodoo Haze are all the bands that'll be out there playing at their respective times. We've got food trucks that are going to be out there. We've got a train ride for the kids. We've got Half Pint, the little tank that's going to be there to shoot some swag out for everybody that's there. All sorts of different things are going to be going on out there.
And so, you know, in terms of food and entertainment and all of that, it's going to be a great time, obviously. And it looks like it's going to be a little toasty. So obviously some refreshments to quench your thirst. Let's put it that
way. Absolutely. Those will be available.
But also it's a time for recognition and sharing information, recognition of veterans and sharing information with veterans, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we're going to have different things. We're recognizing veterans from the community, businesses that support veterans in the community. And really, it's a time to recognize, appreciate all veterans. But it's not just for veterans, because we're recognizing and honoring community members as well, because we know an event like this wouldn't happen without the support of community members. But then also, you know, the veterans that receive the support from the community members on a daily basis, whether it's, you know, business hiring veterans or just supporting them in different ways with a discount or something like that. So, you know, it's called the Flag City Community Vet Fest, but the community is a big part of that, where it's for everybody to come out and just enjoy the time.
Yeah. And how that's such an important point. And I definitely want to emphasize, this is, you know, everyone can take part, whether you have served or not. You can come out and celebrate those who have, and we've talked about this before, but how important is that? I mean, what does that mean to the veterans within the community to see that support? I mean, we talk about it all the time, but actually to see that kind of support.
It's pretty amazing. It helps a lot for the veterans in so many different ways, whether it's just saying thank you, or it's, you know, that 10% discount that different places offer, or whatever. It means a lot. Not that it's expected, by no means. You know, when we sign up to join the military, it's you do it with no expectations of any gratitude, anything like that. But I think people understand that, and they're willing to offer that support.
And again, as we mentioned, the Hancock County Veterans Service Office also will be there to interact with veterans, maybe reach some folks that they haven't reached or haven't talked to for a while, and you know, make that contact and let people know what types of services that the Veterans Service Office can offer.
Yeah, absolutely. Our whole staff will be out there running around there to support the veterans. If they've got questions, we're always there. And the big thing is to come over to our new office at 401 Olive Street, you know, if they do need that support for anything. And that's a big thing. You don't know what you don't know. So come on over and find out.
That's a good point. You guys have it's not like you haven't been doing anything while you're planning and organizing all of this. You've been moving into new digs yourself. So it's been a little busy, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is really, you know, one event of many that we put on, because we've got Vet Fest this weekend, but in less than 2 months, we're doing our summer VEF. So, you know, we're always doing anything we can to provide the resources to veterans in the community.
So give us all of the details. Again, this is happening on Saturday, right?
Yep, this Saturday, down on Broadway, gates open at 3, bands start playing at 4, and the last band closes down at 10 o'clock. So we want veterans and community members to come on out and have a good time.
Is there an admission charge for this?
There is. It's $5. 12 and under are free, though.
Okay.
And all the money that's raised for this goes to support Reach Across America. a homeless veteran initiative that we have here in the community. And then we're also doing Toys for Tots, as well as non-perishable food items are being collected for local food pantries.
All right, very good. And we have a link on our webpage for more information about the second Vet Fest happening this weekend on Broadway downtown. And if you're not sure where that is, head to in the general direction of downtown and follow the music. You'll be able to find it without too much problem.
Follow the music, look for the big flag, and come on out, because we got a big surprise coming out on Saturday while we're there.
All right, so we'll look forward to that. Toby Brown with us this morning. Thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. Want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program, of course. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage. Check us out online at goodmornings.net. And if you're a regular listener to the podcast, we would appreciate it if you would take a moment or two to leave us a rating or review on your favorite podcasting platform to help others discover the show as well. And we thank you very much. Coming up tomorrow on the program, the Better Business Bureau is warning of a recent spike in employment scams. We'll tell you what you need to know to protect yourself from fraud. Plus, want to get away? 50 North has a travel experience for whatever adventure you're seeking. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.